This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. It is Monday. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike Bo and Tiff here hanging out with you on a rough day if you are a Falcons fan after a tough loss. But hopefully you had a good Thanksgiving weekend overall. I know a lot of us were with our families. Some of us were not, including myself. But did you guys have a good one?
You didn't get to see your family at all? Did you get home Friday or Saturday?
Late Friday night, like way late Friday night.
Gotcha.
Thought about doing it on Wednesday, but my father's hilarious. Well, it's hilarious. He's like, we're not changing the holiday for you.
Yeah, so, that's funny.
But I'll catch up with them this week. So.
Yeah, nice. No, we went out of town, went to Memphis for three or four nights. It was good. It was good to be around family. It's one of those things where my kids are of the age where it's hard to all four of us sleep in the same bedroom. It's pretty difficult. So not a lot of sleep was had, but a lot of good fellowship, a lot of good food, and then ended up with a random trip to Tuscaloosa on Saturday and finished up sitting right here in the studio last night. So it was an eventful few days away from you guys for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I got a couple of days off and did see the parents. We did Amy's Thanksgiving the weekend before because of schedules. But got to see mine, got to hang out with the neighbors as always. A little golden tea was played over the holiday, but like I said, I was out and about.
What is golden tea?
So golden tea is an arcade, like when you used to have in bars and arcades, it's a golf game, and you play it.
A cue ball in the middle.
Yeah, there is. So.
Oh, okay. I know how to name.
Yeah, you can find them now, like, they build the arcade somewhat style. It's a little bit different than the one you would have played back in the day. But they sell them at places like Sam's and Costco. My neighbor bought one for his bar across the street. So we go over there and, you know, we'll have a few drinks and play golden tee all night and basically compete in that. And it was a couple of late nights this over the holiday playing, but it's just a lot of fun. And, you know, was out and about with New Realm, did a couple of things with them. You know, got to do a show with Abe Gordon, which was a very different experience. Very different, but I enjoy Abe. He's a lot of fun. We, you know, the Georgia Tech game, we previewed that on Friday, and that was...
Did not disappoint.
Holy smokes, that kept me up late Friday night.
When I got home Friday from... I was in Wisconsin. I had the Minnesota-Wisconsin game. It was 20 degrees. That's another story, but if you want to know about good weather gear for that kind of stuff, give me a call, because I had some really good stuff that I was not... actually that cold. But I digress. Yeah, when I touched down, I looked at my phone, saw some scores from college games, and then I still see that Georgia and Georgia Tech, it's still going on. And I was like, wait, what? Got in a car, got dropped off at home, and was able to actually finish the game. So I was shocked. Eight overtimes. It's insane.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal game. You got to give Brent Key and Georgia Tech a lot of credit. And then at the same light, give, you know, Kirby Smart and the Georgia team credit for hanging in there and making a comeback and not quitting on that game, even when it looked like it was out of reach. But Abe and I finished that show at 7:30 and kind of a preview show. That game kicked off at 7:30. I was able to make it home, eat, then go to a few minutes down the road to a buddy of mine who is staying in town and was in town from Charlotte, hang out with him for the entire second half and another, you know, the entirety of the overtimes and hang out and watch the whole game. It was absolutely phenomenal.
It was, man, and I was sitting around family most of Friday night, and I got to tell you, between putting the kids to bed and everything else, I barely saw the end of it. I watched the end of it on my phone, sitting there in the extra bedroom at the place we were staying in Memphis, man. I was like, man, I got to see the end of this. And it was just, I was like, I don't know how many more of these overtimes I can stay awake for. I really don't. But it, to your point, I think huge credit to both sides. You could see both of them at points winning that game. Feel like it was a lost opportunity for Georgia Tech, definitely at the end. Feel bad for Hank Skeen because I think he played his heart out. But that, you know, one obvious, you know, fumble at the end of the game is going to be what overshadows it probably for him.
What do you think? Hey, what do you think about the targeting, no targeting thing on that play? That's a whole controversy. I know, and I'm not.
I'm just not that guy. I try not to ever get on this microphone and talk about penalties, would be penalties, even the Falcons games. You talk about, you know, after the Chiefs game and everything else. I don't like to be a penalty vulture, and I get it. You know, if you're upset about it, I kind of understand. But I'm just, I don't know. I can't ever stomach that from any angle. If it's good or bad for my team or whoever I'm cheering for or whatever, I'm just like, yeah, it is what it is.
Here's the problem for me is I don't advocate for them either. I don't advocate for targeting in this situation. The reality is you could call it on almost any tackle. It feels like because there's so many layers to what targeting is. Technically, leading with the crown of the helmet is targeting, which he did. Reality is, it was a hell of a football play, and five years ago, nobody gives a crap.
No,
about
I'm
it.
With you, and that's why it's hard for me. That's why I don't want to be a penalty vulture because I'm like, dude, I would have done all the same things he did, and it's one of the greatest plays in the history of that rivalry, and I don't want to take that away from that kid on that other side. So it is what it is.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, on to Sunday and what went down for the Atlanta Falcons at home against the Chargers. They dropped their third straight game. So this one, obviously, coming out of the bye week, and they lose to the Chargers 17-13 in a game where Kirk Cousins, we saw him have no touchdown passes, four interceptions on the afternoon. So a tough outing for him and the entire team.
I think he outplayed Los Angeles yesterday in most facets of the game, except for one. And that
tough
was
outing meaning the loss.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not disputing that. I think you got the effort you wanted. If you're a Falcons fan right now, you're sitting there saying, "We did it. We got the effort that we needed out of a bye week." You got blitzed the last week before the bye by Denver on the road, and you needed to see the team respond. I thought they did. You miss a kick early, which ends up being big late. That didn't cost you the game, though. The reality of the situation is you've been brutal in the red zone for three straight weeks now, and that continued. That was obviously another factor in it yesterday, but you can't turn the ball over four times, and you can't have the highest paid player, the leader of the team, the guy that was supposed to be the difference in putting you in the playoffs this year, turn the ball over in crucial situations, including the pick in the red zone, which was just unacceptable.
Yeah, it definitely was. And look, man, we got 3 hours, so I'm going to try not to get too worked up here in the first segment. But just as frustrating as it gets, because to your point, you felt like watching the game yesterday, there was one issue. And that's what it felt like watching the game. And there's never just one issue. It's always multiple things. There's always a bunch of guys that could have done their job a lot better. But when you look at everything you knew you'd struggle with, they have elite pass rushers. They have the number one scoring defense in the NFL. They have a lot of good things going for them. Number five in red zone percentage defensively.
Yeah.
You knew that it was going to be tough. Only five turnovers on the season for them, and you get one on their first drive. And so you're like, dude, all this stuff is off to a good start. You score in your first red zone opportunity, and then it just completely falls off the rails. And it's not only the four interceptions, it's the fact that it could have probably been six when you go back and look at the film. Completely uneasy in the pocket was Kirk Cousins, not making good decisions, getting antsy, kind of throwing the ball up for grabs, all the above. It was frustrating to watch. There is no doubt about it.
Defensively, and I don't know if you just mentioned it, but the five sacks they were able to get to Justin Herbert in this, we were coming in with, a season low?
Yeah, they had nine, I think.
9 or 10 coming into this game. So at least you saw some things happen there.
Well,
the pass rush game.
And I think a guy that I've heard writers and fans and hosts and everything just crush is Arnold Ebiketie, and he played his butt off yesterday. The guy only got 19 snaps. In those 19 snaps, he got two sacks, three tackles, a tackle for loss, and another quarterback hit registered. He was all over the place. He played well against, I think, a good offensive line.
Oh, they're definitely they're a good group. I think everybody, you know, if you go if you're one of the people that goes by grades, they're all in the top 20. The both tackles have been very, very good. To your point, Joe Ald has played at a Pro Bowl level as a rookie, and he's top 10, top 15 pick. So they've done a good job. And when you kind of look at what they've been offensively, Arnold Ebukadi was wreaking havoc. I thought Grady Jarrett had his best game of the year. I thought David Onyemata might have his best game of the year yesterday. Just a number of guys that were all over the place creating havoc up front, which was beautiful to see. And, you know, to your point, you only had 10 going into the game. You got 5 yesterday. No matter how you slice it, it was a good day for the defense.
More on the Falcons on the other side. Also, we'll have more reaction on the Georgia Tech battle that went down 8 overtime. Stay with us here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, I thought they made a couple nice plays, but obviously also feel like we made it a lot easier on them. And when I say we, I mean I got to play better. Kind of goes without saying, but was disappointed in the game I put together, and you know, it hurts right now.
That was Atlanta Falcons quarterback Kirk Cousins with our Dave Archer postgame. And what he was talking about, the play better part, were the 4 interceptions. But overall in his day, he had 24. He was 24 of 39 for 245 yards. But again, him taking ownership there of the way he played, at least with the four picks.
I've tried to make heads or tails about it since the end of the game yesterday and getting on the postgame and kind of talking it through. And I come up with a couple of different things. First of all, I think that you incorporated a little play action. You wanted to incorporate play action. We talked about it last week about, you know, you wanted to see more play action. He's been good on play action. And the second play action in the game, he turns around and throws a pick. So, what he was seeing got changed up. But also, it also looked to me, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, it looked to me like Kirk Cousins probably in the bye week watched the film and was like, I got to get the ball out quick. You know what I mean? Like, I guys are getting home. If I'm double clutching and going to my fourth and fifth read, I've got to get the ball out. And numerous times did he get the ball out and feel completely or look completely uncomfortable with where he was delivering the ball. And so I think that was in the back of his head as well. But I didn't think the pass pro was bad. I didn't think the run game was bad. It just all kind of came down on him, and he did not play well.
Yeah, they were terrible on third down. They were a 3 of 14 on third down. Just brutal. 21% doesn't cut it. Yet, again, though, you dominated time of possession. You had 35 minutes of time of possession. They only had 42 yards in the second half, as in the Chargers. And you couldn't score. You couldn't score touchdowns. I think he got the ball out quick at times, but he forced it. I mean, that first interception was, they looked like they were in some kind of zone, and because of the routes ran, the DB didn't have to drop, and he just stepped up and took it. And I think it was I got to get his name. It was Tarheeb Still had 2 picks, including a pick six.
Pick 6. I was going to ask your thoughts on the pick 6 and what you saw there.
Well, that was that fourth down play, and I don't know what Kirk saw, because first off, that ball's got to be to the outside, if I'm not mistaken. It looked like it was a little inside, and I don't know what he saw, because the corner never dropped.
Right.
He jumped the route because he never had to, nothing took him away.
It felt like that possibly there was some kind of miscommunication between him and the wide receivers. And I don't know whose fault that is, but it was like no way that he thought, oh, I'm going to get this out to, who was it, Mooney that was over there? There's no way he thought, I'm going to get this out to Mooney, this is going to be a good throw. Like, there was something completely off about that play. And like I said, he threw 4 interceptions. It could have been 6. You look at the play, and I think Arch mentioned it on the broadcast as well. You mentioned the play where they blitz 7, and he throws almost right into the middle of the triangle in the middle of the field to Ray Ray into, like, triple coverage.
Yeah.
And it was like he knew he had to get the ball out, and he had to get it now. And Derwin James was upset because the ball got tipped at the line of scrimmage. He would probably have taken that one the other way as well. And so it just – I don't – there he was – he wasn't seeing it well, and the Chargers, you got to give their, you know, tip your hat to them, because they were making it difficult on him in terms of what he was seeing.
Now, you go back to the first drive. Go back to that first drive and that throw to Mooney. He's got Mooney wide open in the middle field. It's a touchdown. I mean, I think Mooney would have walked in and maybe got hit at the goal line, but that's a touchdown, and he threw it poorly. Every throw I felt like he made to Darnell Mooney was off yesterday. Bad. It was short. I mean, the fourth down catch, I think on the same drive that – no, it wasn't the same drive as the pick, as a pick six, but it maybe it was. I can't remember. But the ball's low. And Mooney has to make great catch.
That was bad.
Clutch it, regather himself, and step forward for another couple yards to make sure that he had the first down. It just, you know.
I think they ruled that an incompletion, if I'm not mistaken. I think they came back and ruled it an incompletion. If we're talking about the same one, the one that was over the middle near the goal line?
No, that's the one that's that first throw that he made. That was I'm talking about the one over the sideline that he ends up making. But that one, and looked like Kurt didn't even step into the throw on that one across the middle at the goal line.
Man, that was bad, dude.
I just don't know what, Tiff, he felt uncomfortable, or he looked uncomfortable. It just looked out of sorts. You know, it kind of looked like the first week.
It really did in terms of his uncomfortability. And I don't think there was they were rushing the passer, but it wasn't near anything what T.J. Watt was doing to you.
I was going to ask, Mike, when you're coming out of a bye week and you feel like you corrected some things after losing the two previous games before, and then here you are on a Monday after another loss, what does that do to a team?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a bye week affect a player the way it seemingly did Kirk Cousins. And that's weird to say because it's not like he was on fire the couple of weeks before the bye week. As a matter of fact, this offense has been horrid, been way worse than they were yesterday. I thought Zach Robinson did a nice job earlier in the game. Bo and I, watching a little bit of tape this morning, noticed a couple of different run schemes. They just simply haven't run. A draw action in the backfield. They ran a wham play that I don't think they've run the entire season. They ran that yesterday. But when you look at Kirk coming off the bye, it was like very clear that one of the game plans was, hey, the pass rush is getting home. If I wait too long, I'm not mobile enough. I got to get the ball out. I got to make quick decisions. And yesterday, many times did you see him go, I got to make quick decision, and the ball would either hit the ground or be one of the opposing team's players. So I don't know that I've ever seen a player come off a bye week the way Kirk Cousins did yesterday.
Well, I want to give Zach Robinson credit, too, on one thing, is that this is a team that wants to rush for and have two high safeties, especially on first down, and kind of play like an umbrella coverage. You heard Arch talk about it a lot yesterday. And they said, okay, well, we're going to run the ball on you then. And they did. I mean, they ran the ball 3 to 4 yards a clip all day long. It was just when there was a couple of bad play calls where these jet sweeps on third and one, just go forward. And don't ask Ray McLeod to block Derwin James either. Because that's, and I know that you don't always know who's going to line up there, but you got to kind of, maybe Kirk's got to notice that and be like, hey, this isn't good.
Yeah. On the speed sweep to Drake London, just frustrating because you're watching. First of all, I don't believe in Drake London as a handoff kind of guy. I'm like, that's probably not what his forte is. But
a big guy get a yard, I get that, but not with that scheme.
Not with Derwin James screaming off the right side and Ray McLeod is, 3 or 4 yards separated from the end of the tackle. You run a speed sweep to a nub, you better make sure there's no blitzer coming off that edge. And if there is, you got to get out of it, to your point. So there's got to be things built in to be able to say, nah, this is not a good idea, and that's just not what you got. No, you just had, to your point, a couple of negative plays where it just seemed like once they got into the second and 10, second and 9 range, then you couldn't run the ball and you couldn't stay on schedule. And then Lord knows you don't want to get in third and short because our third down percentage is bad just based off that almost alone.
Defensively, though, and we kind of touched on this before, you did see a lot of, I guess, improvement, especially in the sack department with 5 against a guy like Justin Herbert when you're coming into this game with the season, 10 for this season?
Yeah, somewhere around the 9-10 department. I thought Arnold Abakady was just played out of his mind. I thought he was played phenomenal. I thought Caden Ellis might have played one of his best games. He fights through a double team for the first sack of the game. And you look, Lorenzo Carter had a punch out, basically, went in there and knocked that ball out. I thought the defense played pretty good. The secondary had their best game in quite some time. And really, what you let Ladd McConkey kind of get off in the first half, and then he was non-existent in the second half. Yeah. Part of that is, you made him feel the wrath of catching some of those balls across the middle and banged him up a little bit. But
he was dealing with a shoulder injury pretty much the majority of the game, something with the upper body or arm.
Yeah, it was his shoulder. Yeah. I think, Tiff, from what some of the reports we got from the L.A. people was that it's something that has been bothering him all year. Then he ends up leaving with a knee as well. So he was all sorts of the Georgia product from Chatsworth, Georgia, kind of got banged up. But you look at you look at the secondary, and one of the things I thought they did a really good job of was tackling. This was one of the guys didn't break tackles yesterday against you the way they did the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't know that there's a position on defense that I did not think played well. I also saw Justin Simmons show up in a couple of ways that I haven't seen him show up in a few weeks. And so that was nice to see. You look all the way across the board and you go all the way down the stat list. I said it, you know, leading the show. I thought Grady Jarrett had his best game. I thought Grady Jarrett looked like he had been refreshed, obviously rehabbing all throughout the offseason and through training camp, and then comes and plays all those games in a row. It was almost like it was the first chance he had had in a long time to sort of rest his legs when they were getting back to full strength, because I saw the explosion we have not seen in Grady in quite some time. Same for David Onyemata. I thought he played his best game. Lorenzo Carter stepping back into this role. Troy Anderson switching out with Nate Landman in certain situations. Top to bottom, I thought they played well. Clark Phillips played very, very well as well. But you do miss Mike Hughes. But I thought it top to bottom. There's nothing about the defense that I can pick out and be like, man, wish they'd done that better. Like, you pretty much had a complete game defensively, and I know it's got to be frustrating for that group.
Yeah, it was kind of, again, I don't – missed opportunities. You also cleaned up penalties. I heard you and Chris talking about this on postgame when I was driving home after I'd left the locker room. And you cleaned up on those penalties that had put you behind the eight ball, especially in the red zone. That didn't happen yesterday. But what you did still do was you turned the ball over, you missed a kick that ended up being huge. I know Youngway is doing with a hip flexor so much to the point that they signed Riley Patterson as a kicker, but he was inactive because Youngway went. And Youngway kind of looked like it corrected it after that first miss. But that first miss was so big because this is a team that didn't. This team had given up, I think, something like four. At one point, they were averaging. They'd given up 49 points in the first half all season until they played the Ravens, and they gave up 14 there. You had a chance to put 10 on the board early. That would have been huge because now when you go for it on fourth down and Kirk throws a unacceptable interception, you could have kicked that field goal. It would have been a one-point game. Now it changes everything at the end. So you just, again, you missed opportunities you couldn't afford to miss.
Georgia and Georgia Tech traded blow for blow in a matchup for the ages. But what had Kirby Smart surprised in this one? We'll hear from him next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and there are lots of showdowns that went down over a rivalry weekend this past weekend in the college football world. And to kick things off, it was Georgia and Georgia Tech on a Friday night in an 8-overtime matchup that went down as the Dogs took it 44-42.
Yeah, the one game that didn't end up in a fist fight after
it. Really?
Yeah.
Seriously.
I mean, what a debacle that
was. They didn't have the energy to.
Yeah.
They were going to.
Yeah, they played their butts off. That was, you know, I don't know. That was one of those games, and it's so rare that you really can say it, but it's one of those games where you just felt bad for whoever was going to end up on the short end of the stick losing because Georgia, I give a lot of credit for being resilient. They took everything that Georgia Tech had, and they still were able to find a way to win at the end. Like, there's been a lot of talk about the referees in the game. I thought there was missed calls on both sides. And at the end of the day, you can't cry wolf or cry foul when both sides got away with stuff. I thought Brent Key had his guys ready to go. And I think a lot of people on Georgia's side walked away with like, oh, man, those guys have found them a football coach, and we're, you know, it's not going to be as easy as it's been in the past.
Yeah, I love the shout out to our friend Maria Martin. I think she had the shot standing there next to Brent Key on the field as he's looking up at the scoreboard, and he stands there for, you know, over a minute and just kind of peering at it. I thought that was cool. And I'm with you. I think even the most negative fans on either side have to come away saying, really proud of the way my team played in a rivalry game with all the emotions on the line on the Friday night with the world watching. Both sides, man, really doing a nice job laying it on the line. I thought there was just so many clutch plays both ways, and both teams had ample opportunity to go win it. And in the end, it was Georgia after 8 overtimes, which is just – I don't know how I feel about this this overtime format, but, man, it was a lot of fun to watch on Friday night. There's no doubt.
So was the quarterback play in this one. When you're looking at Haynes King, he was 26-36, just over 300 yards and 2 touchdown passes. Kirby Smart, though, little bit surprised by King's play, given that he's been dealing with the shoulder injury.
What threw it off a little bit was Haynes King's ability to throw the ball, because everything we had been told is his injury prevented him from throwing it. And you look at the previous two games, and he really didn't. And, you know, there was points in time at NC State that it was a tight ball game. If they were going to throw it, you would throw it with the guy, right? Well, they trusted it with Philo. So that was, you know, our expectation was if they were going to throw it with Philo, and then they were going to do the other things. But Haynes came in and –
I agree with Kirby. Oof. Well, there was a report out that came out, and when Abe and I were doing the show, and it came up before it, but on Friday, that they weren't going to use Philo at all, and that Pyron was going to be the backup, and that Philo would, because they didn't want to burn his red shirt because he's played in four.
Sure.
The next time he plays, he burns it. I thought he'd already burned it. And we were like, yeah, that's not, I mean, come on. You're trying to win the game. You pull out all the stops. If you need Philo, you need it. Because no one thought Haynes King could go downfield anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because of the injury.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought it was just, I thought it was a good game plan all the way around. I thought that Buster Faulkner throughout most of the game was just insane. I mean, you go all the way down, that play where Haynes King fumbles, you get that yard, the game's over. And it just, it has to sting for him, because I thought he played as gritty and has played all year as gritty as you could possibly ask him to play, and has been a catalyst for a lot of this team's success. And yet you hate the thought of that one play kind of falling on his shoulders, but that's exactly what happened in the end. And like we said earlier, credit to Georgia's defense for making that play.
A lot of shakeups went down this weekend, and I'll just highlight this one because you had the number two team in the college football playoff rankings and then top team in the AP poll, amongst the top two in the AP poll at number two, which was the Ohio State. They lost to Michigan 13-10.
Unbelievable.
It's a brutal loss.
That's one of the most unbelievable losses in recent history that I can remember. We said it going into rivalry week. Teams will fall. It happens every single year. But I would say of all the matchups that would have been top 25 or even top 50 rivalry teams, this was the one I least expected. Four touchdown favorites, Ohio State. Michigan down bad, with all the things they've gone through this year.
Well, they can't throw the football.
I mean, that is as unlikely of a win. And I was actually talking to Joe Patrick in the booth yesterday at the game. He's like, Ryan Day needs to win the national title.
I've said that. Yeah, we talked about it Friday.
We talked about it on Thursday, too, because I figured that this would be a tough one to come back from, given you've only beaten Michigan one time in your tenure there, and then you had the COVID year as well. But it's not good. And so they took a tumble majorly in the AP poll, the latest edition of it that came out. They're now sitting. They went from two, and now they have dropped to seven.
Maybe they should have dropped more. You know, not only do you lose the game, but then there's a complete melee in the middle of the field, and Ryan Day is on camera, completely away from it all, going, "What happened?" And like, so, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I don't think Sharon Moore necessarily handled himself well either. He was screaming at fans at one point.
True, he was pulling players off the field.
Yeah,
but
pepper spray comes out. What are the ramifications of that?
I saw the Herb Street tweet, and I think a lot of people have kind of jumped on with that he's like, college football owes it to its own sport to look into this, and whoever was an antagonist over some of these situations. Because, and that tweet out, you said earlier, it's like Georgia and Georgia Tech looked friendly after the weekend because of, you know, the fact that their coaches embrace it at midfield and they're like hugging, and it's like these somber moments. And it was everything great. Watching that Friday night was everything great about college football that still exists. And then watching this all day Saturday, I get it. I'm going to do a flag planting thing coming up at 7:40 and mic'd up. But it just was frustrating to watch, man. Just a lot of bad judgment on the part of a lot of players and coaches and even administrators in some circumstances.
Auburn, Alabama, Roll Tide, 28-14.
Yeah, I ended up in the building for this one. I have to tell that story later. My kids, we did not know we were going until late Friday night. Took my kids to this game, ended up with some really good seats, and my kids were both asleep within 10 minutes of getting inside of Bryant-Denny Stadium. I was like, well, at least you're at the Iron Bowl, kid, because you don't even know what's going on right now. But it was good to see. Bama, they're a very, very flawed football team. Very, very flawed. There's a chance that That might have been the last time over the weekend that you see Jalen Milroe in a Bama uniform. I don't know what the future holds for him. I don't know what the future holds for this team. But man, they're tough to watch. And I know that Auburn fans feel the same way about their own squad. So it was an ugly game in a lot of different ways.
Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Tennessee takes it 36-23. You had South Carolina knocking off Clemson 17-14, and Syracuse knocking off Miami 42-38.
Yeah, bye Miami. Bye.
And of course, Texas and Texas A&M meeting for the first time in what I think 13 years since A&M left to go to the SEC. Texas in their inaugural year in the SEC, and they win that meeting 17-7. That was Saturday night's game.
Texas sealed themselves into the college football playoff and the SEC championship game with that win. Miami, to me, has played their way out of the college football playoff. I'm sorry, but you can't, that schedule and how you struggled, To me, they don't deserve to play in the college football playoff.
A real quick, huge shout out to Shane Beamer and what he's been able to do at South Carolina. It seemed like the wheels were falling off that team earlier in the year with the losses to LSU, and boy, they have got it pointed in a good direction. They are playing as good as anybody in the country right now.
Yeah, there are people writing his obituary as far as being fired, and now he's going to get a nice little extension probably.
And deserves it.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Well, stay with us at the top of the hour. We've got the Falcons QB, Kirk Cousins, joining Dave Archer. You're going to want to take a listen to this interview when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.